The following message was recorded live at Crossroads Church, a grace-centered community in Central Alberta.
You know, I love a line that Living Stones Church uses, and it's, hope lives here. Isn't that a good line? Hope lives here. And I thought of that when we were singing that song, because hope lives here too. You cannot sing words like that and not be reminded that there's real hope. And we need to hear that, because the world we live in is so broken. So hope lives here is a line that you could probably put across every church, hopefully. So today, you're in for a real treat. We've had a great morning already, and you might remember during Advent, we said we're going to talk about God's heart for the world. So we did that the first Sunday of Advent. Then we had a group up here of our partners from Uganda, Rwanda, Haiti, and sharing what they're seeing God doing in their parts of the world. Then last week, we talked about God's heart for the city. And today, it's my honor and privilege to introduce to you three of our partners from Central Alberta. And you'll be blessed and encouraged and inspired and I think challenged as you hear them share their hearts today. So I want you to welcome Scott Barkley, Jarrell Peters, and Ian Wheeliker. Come on up. We're going to give you all a mic this time. I think last time we were sharing them. So this is, each service gets a little bit better here, you know? And the people get a little bit better. No, they don't. They're all good. Listen, it is an honor to have you here today. And I know in the first service, I was encouraged. And as I walked around out there, there was a buzz. And what it was your hearts for our city really came through. And so I hope that God's able to take what you share and put his heart on our heart for our city today. And I think maybe just to kick it off and get going, let's start, and Ian, I'll start with you. Tell us about your organization and the role you play in it.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ian Wheeliker. I'm the executive director at the Outreach Center, formerly known as Women's Outreach. A couple of years ago, we merged with Suicide Education and Prevention. We still do that work and work with thousands of kids every year in the school system. But now we're known as the Outreach Center, and we'll have an opportunity to tell you a little bit more about that this morning.
Jarrell Peters with Central Alberta Youth Unlimited. I'm the executive director there, and we've been around Central Alberta for just a little over 30 years, and some of you might know Don Albers, who launched things off in 1989 with a vision to see this hub and all these spokes going out into all the different communities, and now that is what God has provided. We have 50 staff in 8 communities and get to be a part of providing hope and wholeness for youth.
Jarrell, those 8 communities, are they spread all around Central Alberta?
Yes.
Okay, yep. Good. Great. Scott?
Yeah, I'm Scott Barkley. I'm the program manager for Hope Mission here in Red Deer. Hope Mission, we serve, strengthen, and uplift men, women, youth, and children through the life-changing gospel of Jesus, and that is the foundation of all that we do. And from there, the avenues of how we do that and how we accomplish that vision is very different day to day, but we're all very excited to join you guys here this morning and share a little about what the Lord has been doing in the city. And yeah, like Pastor Dan said, hopefully it's encouraging for you guys today.
Oh, it'll be encouraging. And just so glad to have you here. I hope you guys feel at home and know that you're welcome here. And, you know, a few years ago at Crossroads, we were trying to think together about what God would have us do missionally. And so we developed what we call a glocal vision, which would be global and try and do some work with partners in other parts of the world, but also local. And so we wondered where to engage locally. And so we asked Julie Kavanaugh to do a study, and she took about, I don't know, a number of months and talked to all the agencies in town, even the RCMP. And one of the critical questions was, if we wanted to engage in our city and get down to the roots of a lot of the issues in our town, what would be the areas that we should play in, work in? And everybody came back with the same thing. And it was single-parent homes and vulnerable youth. And I know all three of you do a lot of work in those areas. And so maybe a question for you. Ian, we'll start with you. But what, you know, as you look at the vulnerable youth in our community, what's happening? Where are they vulnerable?
Well, We do work in two areas throughout Central Alberta serving families. One area is in poverty reduction and the other is in family violence. So we have Gilletta's Place, which is a second stage shelter for women and kids who are fleeing domestic violence. And we see about, last year it was about 40 kids that came there with their moms because they were experiencing domestic violence in their homes. And so the children that come there have all in one way or another been exposed to toxic stress, heard the violence, seen the violence, or even just the tension when there's high conflict and violence in the home, the tension that both parents experience where they're not emotionally available for the support and the nurturing that children need to grow up to be healthy, happy kids. And so they come to us at Gilletta's Place, usually as a last resort. They've tried everything else, but it's gotten to a point where the family, the wife and the children need safety, and they come to us and they can stay with us for up to 18 months. Their apartments, they're fully furnished. They have all the towels and linens and appliances that they need in order to survive in the apartment. We have fully capable staff, and we have programs and services for both the mums and the children. And the children, it really is an opportunity for them to start to heal from the traumatic events that they've experienced with our counselors and our supports. We also have the Dragonfly Center, that is a trauma-specialized counseling program where we focus primarily on art and play therapy with the kids to help them along their healing journey. But we also support families, as we talked about this morning, that are struggling economically. And so our adoptive family at Christmas supports low-income single moms and dads and their kids at this time of year. And I can tell you that as of Friday, we have, with your help and the help of a loving, generous community in Central Alberta, been able to provide Christmas for 190 families throughout Central Alberta.
That's great. That's great. Thanks, Ian. Jarrell, what are you seeing among vulnerable youth?
That's a really powerful question. For me, I think right now it comes down to the word uncertainty. It seems like for all of us, we would all understand what that feels like when you go to the grocery store or you go to find something in the supply chain and maybe there's a level of uncertainty to its availability. So you get there and you have to pivot around that and it's inconvenient, but we manage. There's also uncertainty in what's coming next. What's it going to look like? And how will this affect my family? How will this affect my parents? How will this affect raising this young child? And what we're noticing is that the greater the uncertainty and the greater the vulnerability seems to create an increased level of vulnerability. And so while we can often pivot around the supply chain issues or the uncertainty that lies before us, those who are extremely vulnerable have a very difficult time doing so. So that leads to increased mental health issues, anxiety, fear, depression, and then even struggle with just trying to get through school or just trying to manage the basics of life. And so, when you combine uncertainty with vulnerability, it just really puts it in a compromising spot.
Great. Scott?
Yeah, at our work in Hope Mission, we work pretty heavily with a lot of schools in town. Right now we're partnered with 16 different schools across the city. And what we've been hearing through our connections with school staff, principals, even parents and families in our communities, that there is an increasing need for access to free and healthy food. There's many people who, single parent homes, struggling to make ends meet and need some support. And a good majority of the families that we work with are in that bracket where we're able to support with after school meals or even breakfast programs where we can serve meals right at the schools. The kids can come and enjoy a free meal on us. And I think that when a kid is going without food, we can't expect much from them. We can't expect them to learn effectively. We can't expect them to make positive choices. We can't expect them to be super, attentive in class or respectful at home. But when we're able to fill their bellies and to give them a sense of somebody cares about me, somebody sees my needs and is going to do something about it, then our goal is to set them up for a successful future.
Cool. Scott, while you get the mic, As you work in the schools like that, you see kids there, you see them come and need food, and you see them after school too. What breaks your heart about what's going on with our kids?
Yeah, I think what I carry around with me is what I see the kids going through, what I hear from their stories and their situations, whether that's at school or at home, whatever, and the burdens that they're carrying personally with little to no support systems. The families as a core are struggling. There's individual kids that are being tossed from foster home to foster home or group home to group home, and they are being brought through the ringer with little to no support. And those are the kids that I'm really drawn to, that Hope Mission goes after. The kids who are on the edge of society, who are marginalized, who are oppressed, who are struggling day by day and carrying the weight of, where's my next meal gonna be? Who's gonna support me today? Who's gonna reach out? And these kids go through a lot, but they have a hard time asking for help. So that's what Hope Mission does. We position ourselves in the schools, with the families, right where we need to be, so that our paths will cross with these people who need help. And we do a variety of different things to do that.
Awesome, thank you. Jarell, I was intrigued by, in the first service, you talked about all the different things you guys are involved in. Give us a picture of all the things that Central Alberta Youth Unlimited is engaged in.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a number of core programs. So we have our youth housing program where we get to help young people who are not ready for independence and maybe don't have a place to live or they've been couch surfing. And so we house them in our youth housing program. We have our counseling program where we offer counseling, professional therapy for youth and for single young moms. And then we have our Stepping Stones program, which is for pregnant and parenting young women. And it's a program where we get to walk through relationship with them and help support them. We have a couple of youth centers, a skate park, two coffee shops, Timber Coffee, and trips for youth, service trips, and a number of different contacts in schools and community locations all over Central Alberta.
That's really neat. I'm familiar with Timber and Sylvan. You got it in Pinoca?
Yes.
And you got the skate park right there in Sylvan,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
It's intriguing how kids come across from the high school all the time. You're known.
Yeah, it's incredible. We are strategically placed. And that location, people often wonder why we wouldn't be in maybe a more business-friendly location. And it's because we're not there for business. We're there for relationship. And so being one block from the high school, we get kids who walk through the doors all day, every day, and find refuge. And they come when they get kicked out of class, and they come when they did well in class, and they know that they've got a safe place, and they know they've got somebody they can talk to. And so we just love the avenue of relationship that we get in Timber Coffee.
Wow, that's great. You know, we had Timber Coffee in the cafe in the first service. First service isn't as alive as you are, but they do drink coffee. They drank it all, and they busted the machine, so... You know, but what I can offer you today is lunch. At 12:30, we're having lunch. Won't cost you a thing. And you can come and meet these gentlemen and ask more questions. So you'll see the Timber deal out there, but there's no coffee. Just thank the first service. But come for lunch, and I think you might get some Crossroads coffee there. Not the same, but it's got caffeine. It'll be good. Jarell, can you just unpack a little bit more that Stepping Stones program? That's intriguing.
Yeah, for sure. So again, it's walking with pregnant and parenting young women. So very often single moms who have found themselves in a very vulnerable and difficult circumstance of life. I mean, as parents, we get it. We know how difficult it is to be a parent and the uncertainty that that creates and the twists and turns that come with parenting. And so when you're a young person, a young woman who... very often lacks supports, they lack relational connections, they lack a lot of the knowledge and the maturity needed to be a mom. They come into this program and our team at all of our sites, we're in four locations right now with Stepping Stones. They're such an incredible group of staff that get to lead that program, and their mission is to provide hope and wholeness for those young women. And so they create safety and community and family, and time again, these women will report back that they found family, they found a place, they found a spot to belong. And for a lot of them, you know, They start young and they don't ever want to leave. They want this to be their permanent home. And so they get to be able to be immersed in a place that provides them with the basics of how do you budget? How do you make food for a baby? And how do you put in a car seat? And then also, how do you walk through life? So this year, all four of our sites have a theme, your story, a life worth fighting for, and just helping them unpack what is your story and what have you gone through and what do you need to learn and where are you going to go next? And just being aware of how Jesus can be a part of their story.
That's great. That's really good. Ian, you know, Julietta's Place was an awesome thing. And what you guys do is provide a safe place for people that really need it. Talk to us about the long-term impact of what you do after the 18 months. You know, what's the long-term impact of what you're engaged in?
Right. So while the women and children are with us, they learn about abusive relationships. They learn about the impact on the women. They learn about the impact on their children. The women are leaving with a safety plan. They're leaving with a financial plan. They're moving back into the community. We actually do a year-long follow-up and support with the families after they leave us, just to keep that networking connection and relationship going that we're talking about, which is so important. But what we're really hoping to do in terms of long-term impact is to disrupt or interrupt the cycle of violence, the generational cycle. And so the idea would be that we help families now with young children so that those children grow up and don't have domestic violence in their adult relationships and don't raise their children under the circumstances that perhaps they were raised. They're not exposed to the trauma of violence or the toxic stressors that have such a profound and lifelong impact on children once they're exposed. So what we try and do is to give the families that we're working with skills, the knowledge, the support, the connection, and then the hope to move on in a life free of violence, and then the next generation can duplicate that and raise their kids in love and in healthy relationships. And it's so important. You know, I was talking to Edie at the break. She serves with Safe Harbor, the homeless shelter. And we were saying that in this world, you know, we're taught, stand on your own 2 feet. And there's a little bit of stigma and shame in needing to reach out for help. But the message that we're all sending and talking about today is we have to reach out. We have to be there for each other to lean on. We can't do this alone. And when we come together as community, as church, as people of faith, people of love, and good neighbors, that's when we make miracles happen. That's when we lean on each other, and that's when we see things start to change. And I think that's kind of our message.
You know, I was intrigued, Ian, in the first service. I asked you, just hit me as you were talking, but about what percentage of our community would be single-parent homes. Tell us what you said.
Well, what we talked about is, sadly, in Canada, the divorce rate is very high, and I've seen statistics where it's, you know, 40%, 45%, even up to 60% of marriages end in divorce. So then you've got single moms and single dads that are, you know, working hard to raise the kids and make ends meet. And I don't know the statistics in our community, but I would guess that we've got, you know, sort of about 20% of our population of families are single parent families, and they need it. They need our help and our support as well. As you know, when you don't have the extra income or that support, emotional support, it's a huge strain on the single parent.
Yeah, that's a big number. Scott, I want to ask you about, you talked about breakfast, but fill us in a bit more on the breakfast program that you guys are involved in.
Sure, yeah. This breakfast program, something we're really excited about. It just started this September, so it's really new to our repertoire of programs and resources. But it's something that's really taking off in really powerful ways, and we really believe that the Lord is using it for a lot of good things. So we had it on our heart this summer to start a breakfast program, so we reached out to a couple schools, and now we're in 3 schools where we serve a healthy breakfast for the students who are coming early to school, whether they are not able to get food at home, or maybe they are, but they just need a top up when they get to school. They come in from the cold and sit down in a classroom, get some food. And so we're meeting the physical need of food, but we're also sending staff to be on site every morning. So we have staff in the classroom, volunteers in the classroom with the kids, and we're meeting the physical needs and the connection needs, the social needs, where we're able to mentor the kids and encourage them and hope that they have a good day and really just start their day off on the right foot. For a lot of these kids, who knows what they're going home to at the end of the day? Who knows what experiences they had when they got up in the morning? And for a lot of them, we're the first friendly face that they see. We're the first smile that they see in the morning. And for some of them, maybe we're the first people to really show that we care. And after a long weekend, you know, that can be really powerful stuff. This breakfast program has also provided some really unique mentorship opportunities that we didn't expect, which we're hoping will continue to grow. But we saw in September these kids starting off school, not too sure where to fit in, not too sure how to act. They chose to make some maybe not so great behaviors, we'll say, knocking things over or, you know, getting into little arguments or bickering with other students. And if that's the first thing you do at 7:30 in the morning, you're not going to be ready to learn. You're not going to be set up to succeed and make more positive choices for the rest of the day. You're a little off. But when we can give these kids jobs is what we learned. If we give them jobs to hand out juice boxes or muffins or to throw in some toast in the toaster for the younger kids, then they have a little bit more purpose and more responsibility when they come to school. And instead of the kids dragging their feet and causing a ruckus, now we see them with this, you know, little bit of pride. Their shoulders are held back, their head is held high, and they have more responsibility. They have a job to do when they come to our breakfast program, and they know it. And we're able to really encourage them. Be like, man, you did so good at handing out those juice boxes today, or you did so good at making that toast for the little kids. Like, thank you for setting a good example. And when that's the first message they hear in the morning, it can really affect how they're able to learn and the rest of the choices that they choose to make that day.
That's great. You know, I was asked in between services, as you talked about that and some of the programs you mentioned, how can I engage? How can I volunteer? And I'll have a lot of free time a year from now too. So the answer I got from Lori was that if you come to the lunch, we're going to talk about how to engage, how to volunteer, how to kind of roll up your sleeves. So you come to lunch at 12:30, you might hear more on that. Couple of questions that I think are really important. And what, in terms of hope, what gives you hope? Or is there any hope? I mean, do you have hope for our town?
Yeah, I like this question a lot. Obviously, being from Hope Mission, that's what we're all about. What encourages me in my work and in our ministry is when kids have light bulb moments, when they realize something so profound, whether this is a, you know, grade one student or a grade eight student. We have opportunities where we're able to mentor and when they're vulnerable, when they're, you know, at low moments. But oftentimes, it's when we're not expecting it, is when the Lord moves on their hearts. Mm. And so a few quick stories. A couple of years ago at camp, we had a group of teens come out, and we were able just to spend the week with them, teach them about the Bible, you know, obviously do normal camp stuff. And one evening, we sent the teens out into the forest, and we just played some worship music on a speaker, and we were just praying for the kids while they were out there. And not too long after that, one of the boys comes up to us with tears streaming down his face, and he was just sharing that the Holy Spirit was ministering to him for the first time in that moment. And it was really, really impactful for him. So for him, that was a spiritual light bulb moment. We also had younger kids, a more recent story just a few months ago. We had the kids write out little thank you cards for our donors, where they draw a picture of, you know, their favorite part of our programs and write a little message underneath. Really cute. We have some in the foyer if you want some. But while we were doing that, one of these little girls, she's probably about 6 years old, she calls me over and she has tears welling up in her eyes. She said, "Scott, I'm teary happy." I said, what does that mean? Like, what, do you want to tell me more about that? She said, "I'm happy sad. Because there's just so many people who care. And to me, that was, I was almost in tears in that moment, because it finally, like we saw it, it clicked when we were just filling out little, you know, she was just coloring. And the Lord moved on her heart to show her there is a community in Red Deer. There's a community of churches, of individuals, of Hope Mission staff who deeply, deeply care about her and her physical needs and her emotional needs. So that's what motivates me and keeps me going.
That's great, great story. Really good. You know, I watch a few interviews and they go one, two, three. So I'm going to jump over to Ian and come back to you, Jarrell, Ian.
Well, I think, Scott, it's beautiful. And I think for me, too, it's the compassion, it's the humanity. We're made in the image of our Creator, and we, too, are creators. But our humanity gives us deep, deep compassion, and it gives us, that's what really generates hope, is that when we know that there's people in our community, that there's folks like you, that we're not alone, that there's people we can reach out to that we can lean on. When we're going through the storms of life, when we're dealing with overwhelming crisis, that's for me what gives us hope. And so I've done this work for 35 years, working with people and seeing the little miracles, seeing the connections, seeing the people being able to reach out, lean on a program or a service, and have their lives literally changed, whether it's through the faith community or the services and programs. But it's people coming together and people caring, and it's through care and compassion that gives me hope. And then the little miracles that you see day in and day out. Last Christmas, we had done a mail out on a little postcard, and a woman and her kids who were staying at the emergency shelter and praying that they would have their own place for Christmas picked up the little mail out in the snow. And my name was on the bottom of it because it was solicitation. And according to fundraising rules in Alberta, you have to have name and contact person. And people in the community have to call and say, is this real? So she called me and she said, hey, I'm over at the emergency shelter. And I was hoping that maybe you could help me and my kids find a place for Christmas. And so I said, let me call you right back. And I got a hold of Charlie, who's the manager and oversees our Gillette's place, and said, Charlie, I said, what's going on? The women's shelter has a woman and her couple of kids, and we've got space. How come she's not in our shelter? Anyway, the paperwork was started, but it got lost in the shuffle. You know how that happens. So she had applied for Gillette's place. Whatever happened, the application or the paperwork didn't get over to Gillette's place. I said, Charlie, call Kathy over at JP's and see if we've got room. Kathy said, yeah, we've got room. Oh, we found her paperwork. We got her and the kids in just before Christmas Eve. The wonderful staff at JP's had put up a Christmas tree, put up the lights, put up the decorations. And so that little miracle for that family happened on Christmas Eve just because people care.
That's a really great story.
That gives
story.
Me hope.
Thank you. You know, when Ian says JP, it's Gillette's place. And that's just a great, great, great word. Thanks. Jarrell.
The impact of relationship gives me hope. As a highly relational organization, when you see the impacts of that and you get to see the product of that, it's incredible. So on a very personal note, growing up, my daughter has struggled with anxiety. And we found it to be quite debilitating for her for quite a season of her life. And you know, we are pretty safe home, and we try really hard to nurture her and provide for her. And we were able to get her connected to one of our Youth Unlimited staff who mentored her. And through that relationship, she literally began to flourish and went from being this incredibly shy, very anxious young lady to now she's actually able to work at Timber Coffee in one of our communities, and she's opening and greeting people, and she's so friendly and so warm and so capable and competent in ways where we had thought maybe she never would be able to do that. And by God's grace and through the power of relationship, it unlocked some capacity for her that we just didn't think was possible. And there's this moment that happened just a few weeks ago in one of our programs where a young person was there, and she was expressing, you know, how before she moved to this community, she said, I wasn't a Jesus person. I'm afraid to go home and talk to my family now because Because now I'm definitely a Jesus person. Mm. And so you look at what can happen all through the mechanism of a relationship, and as they get connected and they begin to push past some of the things that before seemed impossible, we just love relationship, and especially in the context of a relationship with Jesus Christ.
That's so good. That's so good to hear. You give all of us hope when you talk like this. And yes, I have a kind of a two-part question, and it's... I guess it would be this question. One is, how are you guys doing? You're on the front lines. You're dealing with the last and the lost and the least and the little and nearly dead. That's draining stuff, and it's heavy. And I don't think you just go home at 5 o'clock and shut her down. You carry a lot in your hearts. So how are you doing? And I guess I want to ask you this question too. How can we help you? As a church, as people that care for our community, what could we do that could help you do what you do? So I don't know who wants to jump in, but Scott.
Yeah, I'll go first here. Thank you for asking. We were talking in the break there. Not a lot of people ask us very often how we're doing as on the front lines, and it is really refreshing to have that recognition. So thank you. I think... my team and I, we've been really tapping in just to the power of prayer, and we pray so often throughout the day, and I think that's what just every time is just so refreshing. When something happens, we pause and we pray. Let's ask the Lord how to do this, how to handle this situation, or how to love on this kid, and that's what keeps us going for the long term. In terms of what you as a congregation can be doing for Hope Mission, I think... again, the power of prayer. If you're continuing to pray for us, for the kids we're serving, for the families we're reaching out to, and for the goals that we're working towards, I think that's the biggest part. We mentioned this in the first service too. I would encourage you, as your time allows, just as you're driving around town, as you're going about your day, just watch out your window for the kids who are walking to and from school, or the families who are out in the cold, and just take a moment to pray for them. To pray that those kids will be safe and happy when they go home, that their meals will be provided for, that as the kids are on the way to school, that they'd have a blessed day, that they'd have energy and attention to learn and to succeed in all of their goals that day. And so, yeah, that's what I would ask for.
Yeah. That's really practical. I mean, you mentioned first, there's drive around the North End. Yeah. Pray for the schools, pray for the kids. Thank you. Jarrell.
Yeah. I won't pretend it's an easy season in leadership, and it is difficult. And there are times where you wonder, why am I doing this, and what is this about? And when you reflect, it's pretty easy to see why we're doing it. And in 2018, when I was asked to consider stepping into the role, I thought the same thing. Why would I want that job? What would I want with that role? And God really pressed on my heart that. The spiritual vibrance and the spiritual resilience of our staff and our volunteers is critically important. And so I thought, well, if I could be a part of that, the whole thing seems pretty inundating and pretty daunting in the scope of what's going on in the lives of young people in Central Alberta. But if I can be part of that, if I can zero in on how to help our staff and our volunteers be spiritual vibrant and resilient, and that's a mission worth being a part of. And so as I've leaned into that, I find quite a bit of encouragement. And as I spend time in there and grow spiritually and then help our staff to do so, that's huge. And so my biggest request would be that you'd pray for the spiritual vibrance and resilience of our staff as they go spiritually, so the organization goes. And so we would so appreciate your prayer for them and for courage in their roles. And that would be an incredible gift.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ian.
Well, I think I've done this work for a long time. I started working for the Salvation Army back in 86, actually, working with young people, working with kids. And I think that I've been able to keep going because when I need help, I ask the community. I ask you, and I ask your neighbors, and I ask Central Albertans for help, and you come through. And if I, like, if I stood in my office and threw open the window and yelled, "I need help," and there was silence and there was no response, I'd be finished. I wouldn't be able to keep going. But it's because when I say we need help, like you folks did for JP's, you gathered all the kitchen appliances, the pots, the pans, the dishes that we were able to put into the apartments and that the moms, when they leave, are able to take with them so they have a start. When I say to the community, work with us, be a part of us, I need your help, can't do this alone, and I get your help, that's what keeps me going. And if that wasn't there, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So for that, I thank you all.
Thank you. And we really need you to put up your hand and say, we need help. You know, we'll do whatever we can. And it's pots and pans, it's prayer, it's whatever, but I need you to ask. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this too, that you got families, marriages, and, you know, you've told us about what you need in your organization, but, you know, you guys need a break, and you guys need to get refreshed, and I would be honored if you called one day and said, you know what, we could use a place for a weekend, my wife and I or my kids. We'll bend over backwards to find you a place, and just go away and have a good weekend. You're doing stuff that is really hard to get away from, and I guess we're really interested in your health too. So and if I don't hear from you in a while, I'll call you. I'll track you down. But we have 1,000 TVs in every house and summer homes and lots of cars, and if we can't bless with what God's given us, some of the things that you need. So I'm saying we're in. And so if they're not, I am, but I know them, and they are. So that's great. You know what? Before we wrap up, I just want to encourage you with a couple of things. There are a lot of tremendous good works in our city. There's the Dream Center, Safe Harbor, Pregnancy Care, on and on it goes. And we support them, and we value them. But what you're doing is even more significant because you're dealing with the roots. You know, if we can get kids and teenagers and people that are afraid to get back on their feet again and get them at this level, it'll help us with all those other issues. You're dealing with the roots, and that's hugely significant. You know, I've said to the people in our church here, maybe you all don't know, but sometimes at the kickoff in September, we gather all the children's workers together and just try and encourage them. And I've said to them, what they're doing is more significant than almost 90% of stuff that goes on in our city, because you're dealing with children. And if you can get the right things into their DNA, give them a foundation and a personal faith in God and send them on the right path, it'll clear up a lot of issues down the road. But that's where you're working. And I'm so encouraged today to hear you. And as you were talking, I thought of a verse, and I got to find it. So think of something to say while I find it, but it's a great verse, and I think it's one that you guys should put in your back pocket and take away. It's from Hebrews, and it's Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10. And I want you to hear it as though God was speaking to each of you personally. So Ian, this is for you, and Jarrell, and Scott. And it's the only way I know how to read the Bible. We read it personally, but this is what it says. It says, God is not unjust. He won't forget your work, Ian. He won't forget your work, Jarrell. He won't forget your work, Scott. And the love you've shown him as you've helped his people and continue to help them. The little people and the families that you help are in his heart. And you think you're helping them, and you are. And you're helping our community. But God says, that's actually love for me. Like, this is big stuff you're in, really big stuff. And we honor you today and want you to know we got you in prayer and behind you. And any way we can, we just want to affirm you. Thank you so much. Just means so much you'd give us this time. It's really great. So why don't you thank them, and I'll let you guys sit down, and thank you so much. You know, this is just a great day, and I can't wait till the third service. It's so encouraging to hear their hearts and to know that as a church, we can support them in some practical ways. And one of the ways that we support them is with money. And that's why we have a Christmas offering, and you see the red envelopes in your seats in front of you. Everything that goes into our Christmas compassion offering goes to support this work and our global partners. None of it goes to pay for the lights or anything else. It all goes there. So I really want to encourage you to give and give generously, because it makes a huge difference here in Red Deer and around the world. And you can give today. We'll take an offering on Christmas Eve, but you can give any time between now and the end of the month. You can. I found out we actually still take cash. You could put cash in there. When you're like me, and you know you go to a restaurant, you take out your wallet and you pay cash, they look at you like you're some kind of dinosaur. But we actually still take cash here. Don't even question it. Or you can give out in the hub or online. But let's give generously, because you know God will take care of us. He's got us. And if we believe in a God that can carry us and provide for us, it frees us up to give to God's work. So I just want to encourage you to do that. In a moment, I just ask the group to come on out. We're going to worship. And then I'm going to come back up here and just pray. And we'll pray for these ministries. And remember, 12:30, lunch. You're welcome to come and hear more. Love to have you there. And we'll be encouraged around the lunch table. So let's stand together and worship.